finding what appeals to you, develop passion for it, spend time and energy on it. And don't be afraid to spend money on your path either. If you can spend time on something, spend money on it as well. It's worth it. It's worth to have something to work for, something that you believe in, and make it yours and become so good at it that they cannot ignore you.
Talking about perfecting ourselves, becoming the best version of ourselves, you tweeted the other day, and I'm going to read the tweet, how to be an attractive man. Number one, be comfortable in your own skin. Number two, know where you're going. Number three, have fun while going there. And number four, huddle Bitcoin. And we've talked about the huddling Bitcoin part, and I want to delve into the first three points. There's a lot of like nuggets, and what I want to focus on was the time we had is how. How do we become comfortable in our own skin?
It's a great question, and the answer is surprisingly simple. Be present. Be present. That is the only thing. It takes practice, of course, but what being present is all about is allowing yourself to penetrate the now and be very intensely present in every moment. So that when you have a compulsion to look at your phone while you're brushing your teeth, or you have a memory in your mind when you're reading a book, what you do is that you practice going back to the present moment and be intensely present with whatever it is that you have right in front of you and stay with it. Stay with it. If you are in a continuous meditative state, you have an option where you didn't have one before because you are no longer reactive. You don't have to struggle for your words, because you can actually allow yourself to pause until they arrive. And it is only in this meditative state, this intense presence, that your honest personality, your most authentic self, and your honest ideas can come through clearly. It is only when we are intensely present that we can be who we really are to the extent that we have learned to be ourselves. If your mind is quiet when you meditate, you have come a long way. And if you can be present in a conversation, you've come a long way. And to be comfortable in your own skin, all you have to do is practice presence, because it is when you are intensely present that you don't have to put on a persona. You can just be your authentic self, because in the present moment, it is the only place where joy and happiness and peace is true. You can have those experiences, you can feel joyful and happy even when you're not present. But it is only when you are fully present that those sensations become truthful. So to be comfortable in your skin, I would suggest that you find your techniques, go on the search. Being on the search is a very important stage of your spiritual awakening. It is when we go to spiritual leaders and guides and read books and go to and watch YouTube videos, and we find ideas that resonate with ourselves, for this past year, I have been in a state that feels like a constant flow state. I'm present most of the time, actually more than I'm not present. And that is it's a kind of consciousness flippening where you are more awake than you are not. And I'm very grateful for this chapter of my life. I'm not sure where it's going, but it's exciting. It's very exciting. I'm almost getting emotional talking about this.
I'm almost getting emotional hearing about this. And the fact that I asked you how to be comfortable in your own skin and you told me to be present. It's almost like sometimes we ask questions in life saying why, like why this happened or how do I do this? And the question is that the answer to the question is it's when we have those puzzles in life and then we as life go on, sometimes we transcend, and then what we realize is that there's no point in asking that question in that first place. And I was almost reminded of that, and it's like you're jumping out of the question itself, the frame of the question itself, on how do we be comfortable in our own skin. It's just by recognizing that it's not the point at all. By being present, there's more to be uncovered. There's more truths to be uncovered about the world than otherwise. And it's not about ourselves. So I get a sense of kind of almost looking elsewhere to find answers. And if you are fixated on this one thing, it's unlikely you're going to find the answers. And second point, know where you're going. And I think one of the other effects of our meaning crisis as a society is that we don't know where we're going. And part of the reason, because of the society and how chaotic it is in the world, and there's a lot of uncertainty, but that's external. And internally, we're even more lost. And a lot of people, most people, and even Bitcoiners sometimes don't know where we're going personally. And I've seen Bitcoiners who are not happy, miserable, have miserable lifestyles, have miserable opinions about themselves, either that's true or not. So how, as individuals, how do we know where we're going as the step number two to become attractive?
Again, a great question. This comes naturally with age. To me, it does. When I was in my 20s, I had a lot more vanity than I do now. I used to be a musician before I was a medical doctor, and I had a lot hanging on that. I had a lot riding on the idea of becoming this huge rock star. And this was a chapter of my life where I had many fleeting relationships. I had almost like a Jesus complex. I was so full of myself and so immature, and it was a great time. I loved it. I was very unconscious, but it was a very exciting chapter of my life. I'm very grateful for it. But I had no clue in terms of what path I was like supposed to be on, I guess. But it doesn't matter. What matters is that you have something that you believe in, something that you want to achieve, and that you devote your time and energy with love and passion. And again, passion is not something that you have. Passion is something that you create by devoting time and energy to it. You're not born with passion. You're born with passion for sleep and titties, basically. That's all we have passion for as babies. But as we grow older, we find different things that appeal to us. And when you start exploring certain facets of life, you find that you can actually cultivate passion. and go on a path. Do something. Find something that intrigues you, and you will develop passion for it eventually. And if you don't, if it's wrong, good. That's the learning process. That's part of the human experience. You try different things. I am sure that I will look back on this time in 10 and 20 years and see all of the flaws of my person and my way of living life that I'm blind to right now.
But that's okay.
And that's okay, because I am on a path and I know where this path leads. And I devote my time and energy and love to it. Yeah, so it's basically all about finding what appeals to you, develop passion for it, spend time and energy on it. And don't be afraid to spend money on your path either. If you can spend time on something, spend money on it as well. It's worth it. It's worth to have something to work for, something that you believe in, whether that is a skill, a career, a vocation even. Spend some time and effort and energy and money on that thing that and make it yours and become so good at it that they cannot ignore you.
That's such a great reminder to have, especially for Bitcoiners, because we Bitcoiners, we stack sets. And sometimes I've seen people, Bitcoiners specifically, are so focused on stacking sats to the point that they miss out on life. And this is what I believe there's a balance there. And I constantly go through these decisions of, do I put this money into Bitcoin, or I do something, or I go use this money to create some sort of experience that I will cherish. I know I will cherish forever, or even not even that. Do I put in this money to experiment with something that I may or may not like? So I guess it's a constant question we have to ask ourselves. And it's a great reminder that if we can spend time on something, we should spend money on it, because our time is more precious than money.
If you want to optimize life, you have to practice being a rebel, because being creative is naturally rebellious. And if you want to make the most of your life, you have to diverge from conformity and be a rebel. And you have to dare to go places where nobody's going to show you the way. You have to be your own leader. And I know, and that is a very masculine trait. And that said, I just want to, for your listeners now, be very clear on what I mean by that. A masculine trait is not something that belongs solely to men. Men in society often carry the masculine role in society, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that women don't have or shouldn't have masculine traits, in the very same sense that somebody who is fully healed in both their masculine and feminine energy have both traits of both the masculine and the feminine to the fullest extent as both sexes.
Exactly. The yin and yang doesn't just exist in the society. It also exists in every individual, that everyone possess both masculine traits and quality traits, but it's just a scale. So it's really not a binary thing, especially considering how complex human beings are. And if I didn't hear you on the answer of the first point, I would have focused on the third point on having fun. But I guess part of the having fun, or largely of the having fun, comes from being present. So I'm going to change my direction on the emphasis on a different kind of part of the argument. The third point in your tweet of becoming an attractive man is have fun while going there. So I'm going to focus on there. So first, do you believe there's the right path? And if you do, how do you personally confirm to yourself that you are on the right path. And if you don't believe there's a right path, where is there? Where is the, what happens after you've developed the passion?
So yes and no, there is a right path and there is not. There is ultimately no right path. But when you start working on something, you create a path. And when you're on that path and it feels right, then that is the right path. And if you were to start creating something and you are on a path and it feels wrong, then that was part of the learning experience and you are now ready to move on. It is when we are challenged, when we don't know where to go, that is when magic begins to happen, because that is when we can transform and transcend.
Yeah, just like before we hit the recording button of how, you know, in times of deficits, that's where the growth happens.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, I like that. Yes.
Interesting. And this is called trusting your intuition, right? Because our intuition or our subconscious mind probably knows more about ourselves, knows more about the right path than our conscious mind. And in the book, The Alchemist, one point in that book that stuck with me is the fact that if you're on the right path, the universe will show you by presenting you with beginner's luck. And I have experienced this multiple times in my life. That I'm now a strong believer of this very argument, to the point that now if I'm trying something out and it feels so forced, feels so unnatural, or just not myself, then I take it as a sign, an indicator that maybe this is not for me. But I think I still have to make the mental distinction between, should I be resilient here and kind of push through that uncomfort, discomfort, or this is something that truly not for me. And it leads to my next question. And you said being creative and becoming your own self, becoming your own person requires to be rebellious. And oftentimes that means taking a leap of faith. And everybody, when they make big decisions in life, it comes down to that leap of faith. So I want to ask you about leap of faith. What was the last time that you took a leap of faith, and what was your thought process dealing with these leap of faith moments in general?
My life has unfolded organically since I went on my spiritual journey. I basically just focus on the path that I'm currently on and let the future come to me. And with that perspective in mind, I never feel stressed, I never get nervous, and I can enjoy things because I'm present with them. I'm not expecting happiness or joy on the opposite side of a completed task or a promotion or anything like that. That's just an illusion. It does not exist. By definition, happiness and joy and love cannot exist beyond something else, because that is in the future. And those things, happiness, joy, and love, do not exist in the future. They can only exist now. So I think that a lot of the problems that we have today stem from the fact that people are distracted from living their lives and not being present, because they have this illness of the mind where it is constantly in another place than where they actually are. We have this time machine in our heads as human beings. We can travel back and forth. We can travel back in time and we can travel into the future. It's a very unique and amazing cognitive ability, but it comes with consequences that we are not yet mature enough to handle as a species. unless we practice presence, with which we essentially expand our consciousness to create a meta perspective on our, to enhance our metacognition.
I'm going to take a leap of faith here and cut you right off, because I do want to talk about leap of faith. I don't know why you're dodging me on the question. Do you there might be a subconscious reason behind. But do you think in your current state, where you're in a constant flow state, for someone who's in a constant flow state, that's the concept of leap of faith just doesn't exist anymore, because you let the time flow through you and the future simply just arrives. So if that's the argument, then you can even say the leap of faith doesn't exist anymore, because things just simply happens to you when the time is proper. Or do you still need to consciously take leap of faith?
I love the first thing you said.
That I have to take a leap of faith to cut you off here?
Of course, sometimes you have to pivot. Sometimes you have to abandon your ideas and you are in limbo. And that's fine. It's uncomfortable and it's fine to be uncomfortable. It's not dangerous. It's where you evolve. As you said, when you are already on a path and you let life unfold organically and you let time flow through you, there's no such thing as taking a leap of faith. Essentially, it becomes almost a nonsensical term. But when you realize, when you come to the realization that the path that you're currently on is not for you anymore, when you have transcended your own path, you enter search mode again. And being in search mode, necessitate taking leaps of faith, because you have to go to places where you haven't tried your luck yet. For a lot of people today, that means quitting their job to focus on something that they believe in more. If you want to optimize life, you have to be a rebel and you have to go to that place and actually try it out. It's not as dangerous as it seems.
It takes a lot of courage.
It requires courage. Absolutely. Life requires courage. Creativity requires courage. Everything requires courage if you do it properly.
I'm struggling with this idea a little bit this past couple of weeks. I'll share with you and see what you think. I shared that I'm this brainwashed artist for myself, right? I construct my own reality. I believe everything happens for a reason and for the better. And there's a way that I can make it to my advantage and grow from it, right? I either succeed or I learn. So I can't lose here. And I love to construct my reality in a scenario where I cannot lose. It's not always feasible, but this is the mindset I try to apply in various situations in life. And I try to be optimistic in all kinds of situations, and I'm very adaptive, constantly looking for being fluid and being optimistic of the situation, because it's unproductive and inefficient and brings a lot of suffer to be otherwise. And I've been struggling with the idea, or thinking about this idea, is optimism yet another form of escape to deal with negative emotions? And I question, if to choose optimism, is that another form of bottling up your emotions and not letting your natural grief flow within you? And it actually can be unhealthy to choose to be optimistic. What do you think?
If you use optimism to escape your current situation, then yes, it's harmful. It's putting on blindfolds. But that's not what optimism means. What optimism means is that you have, that you look forward to the approaching future. If you have a worldview that allows you to be excited about the times ahead, then you are by definition optimistic. It is not something that we use to have a better outlook on life. it is our outlook on life.
So there's just the sense of fake optimism.
There is fake optimism, and it's plenty of it, because there's this crazy idea that we can, that we harm ourselves if we have a negative outlook on life, and the crazy idea that we improve our health if we have an optimistic outlook on life. These are nonsensical ideas that have no basis in reality. You cannot influence your health with an optimistic or negative outlook on life. You can, however, impact your quality of life if you look forward to the future. That can be a lot more comfortable than if you do not. But it doesn't influence your health. So stop worrying about that. You don't have to force yourself to be optimistic. It's perfectly fine to have a negative outlook on life. A lot of people do and make beautiful careers and have awesome, amazing lives when they do. I wrote an entire book about the collapse of society. And that's not very optimistic. But it's exciting. It's fun. It's more about your response to your own outlook on life that matters, rather than your outlook on life. I'm optimistic in the sense that I look forward to the future. I'm pessimistic in the sense that I foresee societal upheavals and more pandemics, we might be headed towards what I, in my book Abundance Through Scarcity, call a singularity crisis. There are all kinds of tremendously terrifying things to come. But that's also exciting, because what we do as a species is that we face darkness and we always come out to the other side still with lightness and with light in our hearts. And that's just who we are as a species. We have love and we have our spiritual journeys. And as we are governed by love, I think it's one of the most mysterious and powerful forces in our species. It allows us to enter darkness and come out the other side still with light intact. And I think that's pretty unique. And it gives me an outlook on life, a response to my pessimistic outlook on life that is perfectly fine. It doesn't affect my health negatively, and it doesn't it doesn't harm my quality of life.
Abundance Through Scarcity. I picked up your book in Madeira and read a few pages based on in the time that I had. And I instantly knew that you were onto something just with a few pages I randomly selected from the book. And the book's title, Abundance Through Scarcity. Those are two seemingly contradictory concepts. And can you elaborate on what exactly do you mean by this phrase and how it applies to various aspects of life? In the sense of, I guess, let's talk about creativity here, in the sense of creativity or personal growth. What is this as a concept and approach to life?
When there's abundance of money, there is scarcity of everything else. When there's scarcity of money, there's abundance of everything else. It's an inverse relationship. That is why Bitcoin is so powerful. It gives us abundance through its absolute mathematical scarcity. That is the idea behind the title. And this is explored throughout some 350 pages, this whole idea. And you asked about creativity. And I think that's very insightful of you, because it might be one of the easiest way to highlight this idea in a way that is easy to understand. And it's basically that when you apply restrictions, limitations, and a framework to what you want to create, that actually becomes an engine, a driver for creativity. If you have no restrictions, no limitations at all, what you create will be a bit all over the place, and it will not be focused, and it will... No great artist has ever not restricted themselves in some way. You're not going to mix oil with watercolors. Mm-hmm. You're not going to mix or allow yourself to have full creativity and be so open-minded that your brain falls out when you are writing a fictional novel where you create a contract with the reader that this is the kind of world that we operate in. These things are possible and these things are not. And you stay within that contract. You honor the piece of art that you are creating by honoring the rules and the agreement of the piece that you are creating. And it's the same thing with the economy, really. When you have absolute monetary scarcity, you can only create value for value. There is no longer any cheap money that can be issued to sustain all of these zombie corporations that are just leeches on society, because they actually have to provide value. In that sense, the Bitcoin economy is a lot harsher than the fiat economy. But it's only superficially harsher, because it's actually the fiat system that is incredibly oppressive and damaging to individual creativity and to our futures. What the fiat system does, the whole entire system is based on the ability to create money out of thin air, which everybody else has to work for. What this does is that it steals from those who are far away from the monetary spigot, and it steals from future generations. The money printer is an interdimensional weapon. And we are right now waging wars against our unborn children by stealing their purchasing power and harming their economy. And this is a crime against humanity, what we're doing. And it creates a world for the future where nobody can afford anything. Nobody has anything. And there's no creativity, no innovation, because there cannot be in a fiat economy. It's when we were on the gold standard, that is when our economies exploded and we saw innovation like never before. Because we need money to coordinate our resources and orchestrate the global workforce, and to cooperate across continents and generations so that we can actually create and innovate. But if our tool for that, money, falters by not allowing us to coordinate our resources and orchestrate the workforce, and so that we cannot cooperate across continents and generations, our ability to create and innovate falters. We are right now seeing a phase of the upheaval of the fiat economy where people no longer want to work for fiat money because the fiat money is so useless that it is no longer worth working for. So it is already failing to coordinate us as a species. It is failing as a tool, as a technology, to orchestrate the global workforce and to coordinate our endeavors. When we don't have an absolutely scarce asset, or just a scarce asset as money, and it is diluted over time, we are incentivized to spend now rather than save. And when we are incentivized to spend now, to spend faster and faster, the faster that the money is diluted, then we lose the capacity to think about the future and to plan ahead. In the Roman Empire, we see these magnificent architectural marvels inscribed with things like, I built this bridge to last for 10,000 years. When was the last time you saw something made by a government with a similar type of intention or inscription? Right now, it requires eccentric billionaires to build these kinds of monuments that will last for 10,000 years. You have Jeff Bezos' clock in a mountain that is supposed to be to stand for 10,000 years. But other than that, like these kinds of, we just don't have the capacity, the mental capacity to think about the future in that way anymore, because we are so we're just so threatened by the monetary system. We're so oppressed by it. It forces us to compensate for our continually lost purchasing power, to constantly devote more and more of our time and energy and effort to gain more of this useless currency that loses its purchasing power over time so rapidly that we cannot even use it to build the future that we desire most. So the fiat system steals our future. And when you have to be focused on survival, when you have to just spend all your time and energy and effort to gain some fiat currency so that you can pay your bills now and eat now and just sustain your life, but you have no ability to save. Just there's no saving. That means that you will not be as focused on the future as you could be. You will not be focused on your physical and mental health as much as you could be if you had a way to lower your time preference so that you can actually live a little bit in the future. If you are constantly focused on survival, you will not focus on your meditation routine or your gym routine or you won't be acquiring that many skills. You won't be that focused on cultivating relationships, let alone build monuments that will last 10,000 years. Right now, we build these makeshift homes that will stand maybe 100 years, if that. Because we have lost our time horizons as a civilization because of the fiat system. And it's because it has an endless supply. And now, if we just divide this whole argument by one and flip it on its head, and say that when we have an absolutely scarce resource as our money, then we see the inverse in society. We see that now that I have this token that will increase in purchasing power the longer I hold it, that gives us the ability to save it for the future and to think about the future so that you start building the future that you want. And this is not just on a personal and individual level. This extends to society as well. So it is through absolute scarcity that we create abundance.
The fiat society, in a way, it's very largely compromising humanity if everybody's on survivor mode. Like you said, there's no time left, no energy left, no resources left to pursue what really matters in life as humans. And it's definitely a compromise for humanity, both on a societal level and individual level. And how I personally resonated with the argument of abundance through scarcity is, personally, I've experienced eternity only through these fleeting moments. It's those flip seconds that I kind of had a sneak peek of what it feels like, what it looks like of eternity. Because if you stand on the scale of time, and time is a concept, there's no beginning and there's no end. There's abundance of time. And the idea of eternity just really hard to grasp. Can you teach me how to say fix the money, fix the world in Swedish?
Fixa pengarna, fixa världen. I'm not sure. I hesitated because I'm not sure about what word you would use for fix. So there are different words for fix in Swedish. But I think that, like, colloquially, which is like the fix the money, fix the world, it's a colloquial expression. And to best translate it into Swedish, I would say I would just use the word fix. Very similar then. So fixa, which is how we do verbs in Swedish, where you put an A at the end of the word. So fixa. So like we can make verbs out of basically anything. Like Google, if we say googla, that becomes the verb to Google. So that's how Swedish verbs work. So we say fixa pengarna.
Pengarna.
Yeah, that's perfect pronunciation, actually.
Fixa pengarna.
That means fix the money. Fixa världen. Världen is the world.
Fixa pengarna, fixa världen.
That's good.
Thank you so much for taking the time to have this conversation with me. Really appreciate how genuine you are and how honest you are with all of these questions. I'm always very much blown away by the guests on my show, of how open they are to talk about themselves, talk about their struggles, their life's journey leading to this point, some challenges, success, and the state they're in. So I really appreciate you. I want you to know that, and appreciate your mind, appreciate your kindness, and thank you for taking the time. Any final note you'd like to share with the Lightbox Bitcoin audience?
Well, I want to share with you that what you just said is a very beautiful thing, and you have given me an extraordinary gift in that you have given me and my ideas space to exist, and that is a very beautiful gift, and I think you're doing your job very well. I'm very impressed by you, and I appreciate you as well. And to your audience, subscribe to the show.
All right, thanks a lot. And how do we stay close to your work?
I think I'm best experienced live. So come see me at conferences. Come talk to me. I don't bite. I'm happy to sign books for you and to just enjoy your company and have a conversation. If there's time, just come up to me and say hi. I always appreciate it. And I want to hear your story. I am on YouTube, Yoni Appleberg. I've made these, as you mentioned in the beginning, I've made these whiteboard explainer videos that a lot of people use to orange pill their friends. They're quite good. Go have a look at that. And of course, get my book Abundance Through Scarcity and read it. So I'm on Twitter as Yoni Appleberg, and I'm happy to connect.
This is Life with Bitcoin. I'm your host, Vivian, and we'll see you in the next episode.